When the Buddha lists the customs of the noble ones, one of the customs is delighting in abandoning and delighting in developing. Of course, that means abandoning unskillful qualities and developing skillful ones. But abandoning and developing are also two of the duties with regard to the Four Noble Truths. Your duty with regard to the second noble truth, craving, the cause of suffering, is to abandon it. And your duty with regard to the path, the fourth noble truth, is to develop it. So it gives you a sense that those are the two activities you should focus your attention on most. As for realizing the cessation of suffering, the third noble truth, that's going to be the result. The result comes when you focus on the causes. As for the duty with regard to the first noble truth, to comprehend it, that's going to be part of abandoning the craving. Because when you abandon something, you have to see what the allure is, but you also have to see what the drawbacks are. In this case, the drawbacks of craving are that it causes suffering. So you focus on the cause duties, and the duty with regard to the result will take care of itself. Supplies, even if you've gained stream entry in a previous lifetime, and you're going to gain it again this lifetime, you have to do the work. You can't just allow yourself to coast along hoping that something inevitable will happen. Because you don't know for sure if you've attained stream entry in a previous lifetime. If you haven't, you've wasted your time here. This was a John Fun, a John Swartz teacher once said. He was resolved that if his effort could make a difference, he was going to make an effort. You heard stories of people who thought they were inevitably going to gain awakening, but they just relaxed, coasted their way, and they didn't gain it. So be willing to make an effort. Be happy to make an effort. You've got this chance. The Buddha's pointing out the way. This is the way to the end of suffering. It's something you can do. So pay attention to how you do it. Like right now, you're focusing on the path, trying to get the mind into right mindfulness, right concentration, using right effort. All three of those factors of the path are a part of the concentration khanda, or concentration aggregate of the path. Anything unskillful comes up in the mind, you want to get rid of it. You want to make sure that you can also prevent it from coming back. As for skillful qualities, if they're not there, you try to give rise to them, and when they are there, you try to maintain them. You focus on the breath. Where do you feel the breath in the body? As you pay attention there, that's the beginning of right mindfulness. Then, as the Buddha says, you try to breathe in a way where you're sensitive to the whole body. And you begin to realize the breath is not a sensation that's felt only at one spot in the body. It reverberates throughout the body. So allow those reverberations to be comfortable and try to stay with them. Any thoughts that come into the mind right now that would pull you away, you don't want to go there. That's the important thing, to let go as you're holding on to your object of concentration. You hear so much about letting go, letting go. Remember, letting go is the duty with regard to the causes of suffering. Concentration is something you want to develop it. You don't say, well, I had a moment of concentration. I saw what it's like. It was nice, but it too passes away. That's not your duty with regard to concentration. Your duty with regard to concentration is to develop it. So if you find the mind wandering off, come right back. Wanders off again, come right back again. As long as you keep the breathing comfortable, it'll be easier and easier to come back. If you don't like the idea of making it your duty to be concentrated, just tell yourself, I'm here to enjoy the breath, enjoy the breathing process in the body, to allow it to nourish the body. As John Fung used to say, play at the meditation. In other words, learn how to enjoy it. Get really interested in this issue of how to get the mind to stay with the breath. How to catch the mind when it's about to wander off. What are the warning signs? It has its warning signs. Where are they? Keep an eye out for them. You begin to see there are many levels of conversation going on in the mind. Parts of the mind that say, as soon as the boss up at the top is not paying attention, we're going to slip off. And then these voices will pretend like they hadn't said anything. They erase their emails. But when you catch them, you realize, okay, you have to be extra vigilant. Breathe in a way that's really good. So you can put those voices into a stupor. So get really interested in the nuts and bolts of the concentration, nuts and bolts of breath meditation. Because the more you're interested here in this process, the more you're going to see how you're shaping the present moment. All those lessons you want to learn in terms of dependent core rising, all those factors, they're right here. As you get more engrossed in the meditation, as John Fuang would say, as you get crazy about the meditation, even the little nuts and bolts, especially sometimes the nuts and bolts, the more you're going to understand. You have more to reflect on. Remember, as the Buddha said, the Dharma is nourished by commitment and reflection. You commit yourself to doing this well, and then you reflect on your actions. And this reflective nature here, this is an important part of the path. Because after all, the Four Noble Truths are all about what you're doing. The Second Noble Truth is about what you're doing in ignorance. The Fourth Noble Truth should be about what you're doing in knowledge. By doing things with knowledge in the present moment, that you get to see how the mind works. And then you can apply that knowledge to the question of craving. That's craving for sensuality. What sensual images do you find fascinating? What sensual fantasies do you find fascinating? Why do you want these things? Do they really provide any genuine satisfaction? Or is it just like scratching an itch? What are the things that go into making these things? We hear about how clinging to the five aggregates is the first noble truth, suffering. And we cling because of the second noble truth, because of the craving. Why do we cling to those aggregates? Well, we don't see them as aggregates. Sensual clinging doesn't see aggregates, it sees the sensual fantasies that it finds fascinating. Clinging to habits and practices usually doesn't see the aggregates. It sees your ideas of what should be done, how things should be done, what little private rituals you have. Clinging to views, again, very rarely thinks about views in terms of the aggregates. Thinks about them in terms of views about reality out there. This is the way things really are. Clinging to your sense of self, again, rarely looks at the you as aggregates. It looks at you as a person, you as a being. It takes effort to see these things as actually products of clinging to aggregates. Where do you get to know the aggregates? You get to know them while you're doing concentration. You've got the form of the body, or you've got the feelings of pleasure that you're trying to create, the feelings of pain you're trying to breathe through, the perceptions you hold in mind to keep the mind here with the breath, your intentions to stay here, which is one aspect of fabrication. And in the beginning, you're directed to thoughts and evaluations about how to stay with the breath and what makes the breath comfortable, how it can fit in with the mind. How can be made to fit in with the body? So this is priced to the sense of those feelings you want. And finally, consciousness of all these things. You're getting hands-on experience with the aggregates. the more you see these things as aggregates, then when you look at your sensual fantasies, you begin to see, oh, there's a perception, that's a thought construct, that's a directed thought and evaluation. And step back from these things. Like a movie critic. The movie critic just doesn't get absorbed in the story of the movie. The critic has to see, how is this scene constructed? How is this narrative arc constructed? How did they put this thing together? When you see that, that's when you really begin to know, when you really begin to comprehend the First Noble Truth. And begin to see that these things that you aim at through your sensual cravings, your cravings for becoming, cravings for non-becoming, they're pretty ephemeral. They're not really worth all that much. Now you keep in the back of the mind the fact that there is that third noble truth, that there is a cessation of suffering that comes when you let go of these things. Because without that possibility, you'd say, well, whatever I've got, it's as good as it gets, so I might as well keep with it. But your main emphasis is going to be on the first, second, and fourth noble truths, informed by the knowledge that there is that third. So focus on the causes. And when the causes are complete, you really get to know what the mind is doing, how it creates things, how it fashions things, how those things dissolve away, how it keeps on fashioning more. There will come a point when the mind says, enough. I want something that's not fashioned. If your concentration is strong enough, your comprehension of suffering is acute enough, you can't let go of the cause. That's how the third noble truth is realized. The other truths work because they deliver you to the third. But as long as you haven't gotten there yet, you can focus on them. They're the ones that are going to do the work. They're the ones that are going to do the heavy lifting. And the results, when they come, you realize they're totally worth it. All the effort that went into the path, that went into abandoning and developing, was wise effort. The best thing you can do.